to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 19th of February 2019, Tuesday class. And it coincides with our Chinese full moon day, the 15th of the Chinese New Year, Zhong Gome. But we call it our Valentine Day, Yan Xiao Jie. So last Thursday was the real Valentine Day, but a lot of Kayamita now I have Valentine with the Dhamma. So that was a good one. So today is another Yan Xiao Jie, but a lot of people tonight celebrating Zhong Gome. I think the temple everywhere they are celebrating, but we have our Dhamma session here, which is very good. Okay, we shall now develop the faith sadhana virya, then mindfully we shall proceed with our puja chanting. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phụ Sa. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phụ Sa. Namo Quan Sư Hình Phụ Sa. Namo A Di Đà Phật. 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 Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Hoàng Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Hoàng Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Hoàng Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated and turn to page 1 of the chanting book, the Vandana. We will chant from the Vandana onwards. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adina Dana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Micchacara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. มุสาวาทาวิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรัยามัจจาปะมาทัตถานะเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามินาวิชันทปฏิปาปูชาoffering of light gandha sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambudang pujayami tamonodang ganna sambarayutena dopena hang sugang hinaPujaye pujaniyang tang Puja bhajanang mutamang Vanna ganda guno vetang Etang kusuma santatin Pujayami munindasa Siri pada sarorohePujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena mattena cha hotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivase tuno bante.Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatumutamang Adivasetuno bante Pale parikapitang Anukampang upadayaPatigan hatu mutamang Adivase tuno bante Bojanang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all thisPuja offering, significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma.That cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One.Strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings,May our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripaja. Padang Pujayame. Dhammang Pujayame. Sanghang Pujayame. Okay. We will now have half an hour of silent meditation. We will off the light. Then I will set the alarm. In 30 minutes time, it will ring. Okay, for those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away proceed. For those who still need to train their mind, you can do so. By now, I think all of you should be familiar with what you are supposed to do when you come here for formal meditation. The basic aim is to train our mind to develop the heedfulness. To be heedful, you have two parts. First is ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So the first part is important. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful. So our training here, you still need to train, is to develop the mindfulness first. After that, stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then develop the silent mind, the meditative silence, until the mind enters sati. That is basically what you are supposed to do. Then for those who already have their five spiritual faculties developed, you just relax body and mind, silence everything, and maintain awareness. You can maintain awareness either at your heart area or at whatever object of meditation that you are familiar with. Then you allow the meditation object to move on with mindfulness until it becomes quiet, very still. Until finally there is no movement. So basically that is to train your mind to realize the silent within. The silent mind, which is your meditative mind, is pasati. So that is the first training. Then when you stay with that silent mind, the mind on its own, that free mind, will enter sati. Then it becomes mindful on its own. Then the mind that is mindful is always in sati. Then later on, when you come out of the meditation, because you have stabilized it, everything you do, you are in the state of mindfulness. Because when the mind has entered sati, it is able to become mindful throughout of everything that you do, your movement, your physical activity. Then it can also be mindful of phenomena. Whatever phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, then everything is like a flow, the spacious awareness without a center when you silent in the formal meditation. Then when it stabilized, when you come out of it, you can have specific phenomena awareness, which is mindfulness of the phenomena. Your awareness and the phenomena move as one. Whatever the phenomena is, it can be physical phenomena, your action, your movement, your bodily activity, and the form, posture, etc. then it can be your mental movement at the moment of feeling, moment of perception, moment of activity of mind, moment of consciousness. The silent mind can perceive them. Then later on in the midst of life, you can be mindful of all of your sense perception, whether it is the seeing consciousness, or touch consciousness, or even smell and taste consciousness and thought consciousness, where the mind that is in sati can be aware. Yeah. So every moment of seeing is with the awareness. Yeah. Means specific phenomenal awareness of whatever you see. Yeah. Like a moving car. Your awareness and the moving car move together. Then when you silent, nature's flow, yeah, all the trees, the branches, the leaf, everything, they have their flow, their movement. Your awareness can be with it. Then whatever nature's phenomena that you can come to perceive, you can also be aware with the silent mind, specific phenomena awareness. Then you can watch everything in nature flowing, moving, without thought, silent, just aware. But when you are active in living life, then you need to be attentive to whatever traffic. Traffic can be human traffic, can be vehicle, or anything that move around. So for living life, you are most of the time aware, but when you need to arise your thought, you have to arise. When you need to understand things, you have to be aware, mindful. You need to perceive, you perceive. Then you need to develop certain type of contemplative understanding, you can do it. But you will know how to act, you will know how to attend to them. So all these are natural movement that the trained mind can do. So sati is very important, and you need to stabilize it so that this mind that is in the very stable sati can develop the daily mindfulness. Sati sampajana means mindfulness with clear comprehension of all things. So now the focus is on this. This is the important step within the Avijja Sutta. This is the fifth step. The first four leading to the fifth, I think most of you have. Some maybe at the fourth haven't reached the fifth. So you have to train yourself to have this daily mindfulness, sati sampajana. The first step is just to have Dhamma friends, which all Kayanamita by now should have. You have fulfilled them. You have Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma. You have Dhamma friends who have the Dhamma. So in that sense, you have the good condition to listen to the Dhamma, which is the second step. Then the third step is to develop the understanding. When you listen to the Dhamma, you develop the first phase of Dhamma, Pariyati, means learning the teaching which most of you have done. Then the second phase is to put it into practice, Patipati. So most of you also have developed that. Then you develop the first and second turning, reflection and contemplation of Dhamma, to arise the first turning wisdom and the second turning wisdom, leading to your ability to understand the essential Dhamma, the initial wisdom. So after that, when you put it to test, investigate into the Dhamma, and you realize they stand up to investigation, you will have very strong faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. That's why step three is faith in the Triple Gem. When you have this faith, you will develop the fourth step, which is the initial wisdom, but not the first and second turning, wisdom. So once this initial wisdom come about, you can straighten your views. Then as you straighten your view, you got less sankhara, because you have less avijja. Then when you have less sankhara, you are more mindful. That's why your mindfulness will start to come in, starts to develop. Then your daily mindfulness will fall into place. That's how sati, leading to sati sampajana, can be developed. Sampajana is clear comprehension of what you do. First one is clear comprehension of, they call non-delusion. Then clear comprehension of, the second one is domain of cultivation. How you develop your practices and all those things. So domain of cultivation is very important. Daily mindfulness can be done anywhere, any place, any time, not just the sitting posture or when you are in the retreat. Then the third one is suitability, clear comprehension of suitability. Suitability means the most important place is this place where you are in. The most important time is now, the here and the now, present moment. Then the most important people are those that are within your vicinity, with you. So all this clear comprehension will help you to develop the ability to meditate. Then the first one, of course, is sincerity of purpose. You have to be very sincere. You have to have the faith. So sincerity of purpose will not lead to gullible desire. You are here to meditate, to be heedful, to develop the wisdom, to awaken, to free your mind. Not to develop psychic through delusion, to become special or very, very unique and powerful. So all this you will develop. The moment you hit the daily mindfulness, stabilize it, sati sampajana stabilize, then the sixth step will come to be. The sixth step is you will be able to have sense restraint because of your daily mindfulness. You can see clearly your mind, whatever mental intention it has, or the subtle mental intention, then whatever evil roots, even the subtle one, your subtle greed, subtle delusion, your subtle dislike or emotion. So all this will become clear to you. Then you can cultivate the four right effort to purify your thought process. The right effort to abandon those wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has arisen, because you are mindful of it and you know what constitutes evil. So when you are mindful, you can arise the four right effort to abandon them. Then the second right effort is to prevent them from arising. This one will be able, you will be able to do, because after you can abandon them using the five ways that the Buddha has taught you, the meditative ways, the best, the third and the fourth, then you will develop the understanding of all this very clearly. Then the next time when you are aware of that mental defilement or whatever mental hindrance that arise, the evil roots, you will have the ability to prevent them from arising, because that right effort can easily do it, because you understand These are delusion, not conducive for enlightenment. So straight away it cannot arise. Then after that, the right effort to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, especially all those right thought that are still not in you, right action that are still not in you, the right appropriate speeches that are still not in you, you train them, you determine to train them, develop them. Then the last right effort is whatever right thought, right speech, right action that you have developed, you have to determine to refine upon them and perfect them all, so that your mind state will have the three type of sense restraint, and that is the seventh step. So when there is this three way of good conduct, where you will have right speech, right action, and right thought, where you conduct yourself beautifully, then you will have most of the quality of the sainthood way. You will have good conduct, upright conduct, then some form of wise conduct and dutiful conduct. Then after that, you move on to the eighth step, which is most important, to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, which accumulate with the cultivation of the four noble truths and this three turning. So this is how you become heedful. Then when you do that, the seven factor of enlightenment will keep on arising where you are on the right path. The cultivation bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path. Then your four foundation of mindfulness will deepen your understanding, will awaken you, develop more wisdom. Then when your factors of enlightenment arise, that is the ninth step. Then the tenth or last step is automatic. When the factor of enlightenment arise, you are destined for enlightenment. That's why enlightenment in the here and the now, they will happen. So the tenth step is the awakening. So this tenth step, most of you have at least the first four. So the fifth one is what you must do in your formal meditation. Train the mind until it's very stable, until that silent paucity, the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind is there. And this one must stabilize, otherwise your daily mindfulness cannot develop. Your sati is not stable enough, so your daily mindfulness cannot come to be. But when your mind enters sati, means your sati very stable, then naturally you will be able to be mindful in the midst of life, and your daily mindfulness is like very easy to do. You need to do that. The daily mindfulness, when it comes, you will know, your former mind will know, because that sati is different. You will come to realize what sati is without the words. So this sati that you develop is very different, very, very much more refined, with a lot of clarity and understanding. And this sati will allow you to understand many, many things, to develop a lot of understanding, wisdom, and all those things. That's why with that, the cultivation of the initial wisdom become very easy. Then you can reflect, contemplate, and stabilize all this understanding. So when sati sampajana has been completed, the seventh step, you will be able to proceed to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Then you find it very easy. You can understand the practice very easily. That is how it will lead you to the realization of enlightenment, because the factor of enlightenment keep on arising. So these 10 steps are very important. So I will let you meditate on your own. Then after that, I will ring the bell when the half an hour is up. you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta. Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta. Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta. Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Iti peso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho. Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanaiko pacatang veditatbo vinohiti supatipanno bhagavato sawakasango Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Sāvakasaṅgho Nyāyapatipanno Bhagavato Sāvakasaṅgho Sāmīcipatipanno Bhagavato Sāvakasaṅgho Yadidaṃ catari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato sāvakasaṅgho āhuneyo pāhuneyo dākeneyo anjali karaniyo anuttaraṃ puṇyaketaṃ lokāsati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect, Triple Gem. Bhadang Pujayame. Dhammang Pujayame. Sanghaṃ pujayami. Okay, you can be seated and we shall continue with our sharing of the Buddha and his teaching. We are at chapter 25, Paticca Samuppada, page 419. Okay. turn the page for one night, yeah? Paticca Samuppada. So according to the Visuddhi Magga, there is no God, no Brahma, can be found. No matter of this wheel of life, just bare phenomena rose, dependent on condition all. So this is their ancient English language. So what he's trying to explain is there is no God and no Brahma in all. It's only nature's law turning the wheel of life. Then just bare phenomena rolling by. Like my teacher Ajayantra say, only mighty nature rolling by. That's why we have to accept everything as natural. Then the last sentence is to explain, dependent on condition, they all arise and manifest. Then when condition cease to be, they also cease to be. That's the reason why our world, existential world, is the world of phenomena governed by condition. We call it the condition arising world. Okay. The process of rebirth has been explained by the Buddha in the Paticca Samuppada. So this statement, you have to be careful. We are here, the author, they got it wrong because he believed the traditional explanation according to Visuddhi Magga, which is the Paticca Samuppada over three lifetimes, only happened once. So that one is not correct. So here, when he say the process of rebirth has been fully explained by the Buddha in the Paticca Samuppada, it is not correct in that sense. That three period of time just explain to you one of the happening. But if it happened once over three lifetime, that type of teaching is not useful. You cannot use it. But the second time of Paticca Samuppada that the Buddha actually teach, that one is every moment, every instant. So that one very few people understand. Only real cultivator can understand. So under that one, when you talk about birth, it's not a human birth or a rebirth in that sense. Birth here is mental birth. It's like when you do something upon contact of mind, when you see something, your mind still react because you lack wisdom. So upon contact, there is this feeling that arises. Then because of your lack of wisdom, immediately it conditions craving, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction of mind. So this craving, according to the Buddha, will condition grasping. Then you will grasp at that thing that you see, whether positive or negative craving. If it's negative, then you will have intense rejection or dislike or fear. Then after grasping, it will condition becoming. Means you become that thing. Let's say if it's anger, when you see something that you don't like, then you get angry, you become that anger. Or if there is fear, then you become that fear. That's why it will actually condition you to become that thing. Then the next one is becoming conditioned birth. Birth is you take this mental birth. Like you become that anger, then it manifests into transgression. That being through that anger acted out of it means you are born into that anger, doing the action of the anger, the evil roots. It's just like when you have lust, then you become that lustful thing. Then after that, you started to act out of it, to do the wrong thing, to rape people or to abuse people. So that is birth. You are born into that. So the transgression part is the mental birth. So this one happens every moment, every instant of Patijasamupanna. But they don't develop the actual meditation to realize this. That's why they cannot explain the dependent origination. They have to go back to the three period of time. So you go through, then after that I will explain, then you will understand. So the second paragraph, paticca means because of or dependent upon. Samudaya is cause or arising or origination. Although the literal meaning of the term is arising because of or dependent originating or dependent arising or origination, it is applied to the whole causal formula, which consists of 12 independent or interdependent causes and effects, technically called paccaya and paccayupanna. The method of the paticca-samuppada should be understood as follows. Because of A arises B. Because of B arises C. When there is no A, there is no B. When there is no B, there is no C. In other words, this being so, this is. This is, this not being so, that is not. So the Pali word is the usual quotation that I quote to you all. Imas mean sati idang hoti. Imas mean asati idang arhoti. So here the actual English translation meaning is, like I said, they like to use the traditional olden day English. But for modern day English, it is translated as this. If this arise, that arise. If this ceases, that ceases. So this one is trying to explain to you about the duality. When you create one side of the duality, the other side manifests. But when this duality you don't create, the moment you don't create, both cease. Because they are interdependent. You understand? Another way to explain it is, when this arises, means when this condition is there, then that will arise. It will condition something else to arise. But when there is no condition, nothing arises. That is the more general explanation. The first explanation is more important because it's about duality. The duality, when I give you an example, you will understand. When this arises, means when you start to create one aspect of the duality, like good, then automatically the opposite will arise. What is the opposite? Bad. So when there is good, whatever that is not good will become bad. So automatic. But when you cease to create either good or bad, then the other duality also automatically cease. That's why those who have wisdom, they don't hold on to duality. They know duality pertains to the conditioned world. is for living. But in ultimate truth, when you are able to see things as they are, there is no duality. The Buddha called it suchness. That's why he said thing is just the way it is. Suchness. Suchness is very important. When you understand suchness, you understand truth. To the Buddha, everything is just the way it is. Whatever that arises, that's what he said, there are causes and conditions behind. If condition is this way, things will be that way. When condition arises, things will arise. When condition ceases, things will cease. So this particular explanation is more important. So you have to understand, dependent originating or condition arising phenomena, they are all impermanent. Because without condition, nothing arises. When condition arises, everything arises. That is the reason why the Buddha say our mind is the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, the mundane mind, then it causes things to arise. That's why our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief, and everything arises because of mind. So sometimes we can say mind make ade. The phenomenal world of consciousness, they are mind make. They are dependent originating, condition arising. So all this, they are all related. And when you understand, you penetrate them all. Okay, we go on to the next one. Patisyasamuppanna is a discourse on the process of birth and death, and it's not a philosophical theory for the evolution of the world. It deals with the effect of rebirth and suffering, with a view of helping man to get rid of the ills of life. It makes no attempt to solve the riddle of an absolute origin of life. This one is the author's opinion. It merely explains the simple happening of a state dependent on its antecedent state. Then the author said, ignorant or avijja of the truth of suffering, its cause, its end, and the way leading to its end, is the chief cause that sets the wheel of life in motion. Means not understanding the Four Noble Truths, especially the Four Noble Truths and its three turning. In other words, is the not knowingness of things as they truly are. See, they use this word, which is correct, but they don't understand because they didn't explain it correctly. Or of oneself as one really is, means seeing things as they are. It clouds all right understanding. So when you don't have that understanding or right view or wisdom, then you will have this problem. That is what ignorance is. Ignorance of the truth, the reality, the nature's law that governs life and existence. So here, ignorance is the deeper delusion, wherein we hear so long are circling round, means samsara, says the Buddha. When ignorance is destroyed and turned into knowingness or wisdom, all causality is shattered, as in the case of the Buddha and Arahants. In the Iti Vuttaka, the Buddha states, those who have destroyed delusion and broken through the dense darkness will wander no more. causality exists no more for them. Ignorant of the past, future, both past and future, and the dependent origination is also regarded as avijja. So this is the author's version. So this one is because they believe in the three lifetime paticca-samuppada, which is not the correct one. So here, page 241, he said, the author said, dependent on ignorance arises conditioning activity. He says, sankhara is not conditioning activity. Sankhara, as I said, is everything that your mind can do. It includes all your mental intention, mental thinking. Mental intention is mental volition. All of the mental state, all of your planning, scheming, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, including your peacefulness of mind, calmness of mind, joy, everything. Everything that your mind can do. But they choose it as to define it as conditional activity because they want to explain rebirth. Sankhara is a multi-significant term which should be understood according to the context. Here the term signifies immoral, means akusala, or moral, kusala, and unshakable anicca volition. Volition is chetana, which constitute karma that precedes or proceeds or produces rebirth. The first embraces all volition in the 12th type of immoral consciousness. The second, all volition of the 8th type of beautiful sobhana or moral consciousness. And the 5 types of moral rupajana or form jhana consciousness. The third, all volition in the 4 types of moral arupajana, means formless consciousness. Sankhara is one of the 5 aggregate implies 50 of the 52 mental state if you exclude feeling and perception. This is correct definition because the other mental state there are 50, but the 50 exclude feeling and perception, which is universal. These are called mental concomitant or content of consciousness that you input into the pure vijnana, pure consciousness. There is no proper English equivalent which gives the exact connotation of this Pali term sankhara. As I last time I explained to you, all the various English words that they use to describe sankhara, you add them all together, they still are not able to explain what sankhara is. The most common term is sankhara, they define as mental activity, everything that your mind do, activity. So that one is nearest. Then they sometimes also use the word mental volition or karmic volition. Then they also use mental states, mental formation. So all these are parts of sankhara. But words like planning, scheming, all of your cunningness, they are not included in those few English words. That's why everything that your mind can do, including all your planning, your whatever mental activity, scheming, they are part of sankhara. Even your cunningness, deceitfulness, they are all part of your sankhara, although they haven't become a mental state. It's a type of activity that the mind can do. They can hold that type of mental activities. The volition of the 4 supramundane power, this one is for the enlightened beings, the sainthood way. Path consciousness, Lokuttara, Magga Chitta. You know what is Lokuttara or not? Supramundane. Lokiya is mundane. Lokuttara is supramundane. Magga is path. Pala is friction. So Magga Chitta is those on the path. They are not regarded as Sankara because they tend to eradicate ignorance. So this is what the author thinks. But actually they are also Sankara. The only difference is they are Sankara without the evil roots. They are neither wholesome nor unwholesome. This one is born of wisdom, understanding, free of the evil roots. But they are still Sankara. But the author tried to separate it. So he used the word because they tend to eradicate ignorance. Wisdom of Panya is predominant in the supramundane type of consciousness. This is true. Wisdom is predominant. While volition, Chetena, is predominant in the mundane type of consciousness. But he doesn't know. The enlightened being also got mental intention, also got volition. Their five aggregates are the same as normal people. The only difference is they are non-grasping. You understand? Non-grasping means there is no more avijja to condition the grasping, the clinging. They are already enlightened, awakened to the truth. So they can never hold, they can never grasp, and they can never cling. That's why their aggregates are called pure aggregates, non-grasping. Whereas the normal puttujana, not enlightened one, they are called the aggregates of grasping. In Pali, the Buddha called it upadana khandas, the grasping aggregate is the cause of suffering. Because of the wisdom, their aggregate are pure, non-grasping. That's why their mind is different. Their consciousness is the supramundane consciousness. Okay, we move on. All moral and immoral thoughts, words, and deeds are included in Sankara. Action, whether good or bad, which are directly rooted in or indirectly tinted with ignorance, and which must necessarily produce their due effect, tend to prolong wandering in samsara, means you continue to be born again and again. Nevertheless, good deeds, free from greed, hatred, and delusion, are necessary to get rid of the ills of life or suffering. Accordingly, the Buddha compares his Dhamma to a raft, whereby one crosses the ocean of life, means the sea of suffering. The activities of Buddhas and Arahants, however, are not treated as Sankara as they have eradicated ignorance. This one is the author's way of definition. But if you understand, they are still Sankara, but non-grasping, pure, means there is no avijja. It is because of the wisdom connected to the form and mind, the five aggregate. That's why this five aggregate is no longer deluded, no longer ignorant. It cannot be deceived by the phenomenal of consciousness. So everything within the condition and the unconditioned, he understands. That's why he is beyond suffering. Ignorance is predominant in immoral activity, while it is latent in the moral activity. Hence, both moral and immoral activity are regarded as caused by ignorance. So this one, in a way, he is correct. You understand? Because before you are enlightened, you cannot have right thought. You remember, I used to tell you, before you are enlightened, all your thought technically is wrong thought. Then you will ask me, but yo, I also have a good thought, no, wholesome thought, no. Why you say, yeah, they are wrong thought? Because before you are enlightened, you don't have wisdom. Correct or not? Yeah? You can follow. Before you are enlightened, you don't have the wisdom, isn't it? But you haven't awakened, understand? You may have idea, concept of right and wrong, good and bad. So that good thought is good according to you, understand? But behind the arising is the views, opinion, and the conditioning, your memory. And that one don't have wisdom. The wisdom need to arise through the direct seeing, awakening. So when you meditate with the silent mind, which is not the mundane mind, that silent mind, which is your true mind, that will awaken. The moment you awaken, the wisdom is there. And that wisdom will be connected to the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why this five aggregate of form and mind, and for our case is the human being, once it has the wisdom connected, then you can arise right thought. You will never arise wrong thought. You will understand what evil roots are. And you will have that wisdom and understanding not to be deceived and deluded by it. So that is the difference. That's why here the author say, ignorance is predominant in immoral activity, while it is still latent in moral activity. Understand? Moral means good, but ignorance is still there. Hence, both moral and immoral activity are regarded as caused by ignorance, because that is good according to you. It is still with avijja behind. That sakaya diti, self-delusion, is still there. That's why they still want to do good. Who is doing good? The self, the atta, want to do good. Then, next paragraph. Dependent on past conditioning activity arises relinking or rebirth consciousness, patisandhi vinyanang, in the subsequent birth. See, he used the three lifetime explanation. So to him, he said, because of ignorance, it conditioned karmic volition. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara, he used the word, the particular word, karmic volition. And because of karmic volition, it will condition rebirth. So that vinyanang, sankhara paccaya vinyanang, they call it the rebirth consciousness. Otherwise, they cannot explain. Then the fourth link, which is vinyanang paccaya namarupang, they use the first aspect of the five area of form and mind, means the rebirth consciousness condition rebirth of a form and mind. And then they can explain. They find it very proper, very appropriate. That's why they always go by this. So it's like before you die, that life. The moment you die with avijja, ignorant. So when you die with avijja, they say it will condition that karmic volition, your last thought moment. Then this karmic volition, which is sankhara, will condition the rebirth consciousness. Then rebirth consciousness will bring about the form and mind. So this is their way or explanation. So the last birth going into the new birth. Then later on he said, because of the five aggregate of form and mind that has been born, the sense basis will be there. So dependent on sense basis, they will receive contact of mind. So contact will condition feeling. Feeling will condition craving. Craving will condition grasping. Then grasping condition, becoming, you become that. Then after that, you see, becoming will condition birth. Huh? Again, you are born, you see. Hence, arise the whole mess of suffering. This one is mental birth. It's not a physical birth. And because they cannot explain the first falling, they have to use this. But if you meditate, if you understand, every moment of sense or consciousness upon contact, what happened? Yeah? When the mind make contact, what happened? It's like the physical experiment in there. Yeah? Upon contact, when the switch is on, what happened? The light bulb lights up in there. You understand? So when you start to think, sankhara activity means because of ignorance, you don't understand. One thing to understand, one thing to experience, what you do? You go and think, isn't it? So when you think, you make contact with the mind, with the brain. That is an organ. So upon contact, mental consciousness come to be. That should be the correct understanding. If you meditate, you will know. Upon contact, consciousness come to be. Yeah. Because the mental contact is actually the thinking part. So when you think, you make contact with the brain. You make contact with the mind. So the thinking will trigger of the thought consciousness. So initially it's the pure consciousness, like the light bulb light up. And explained by the Buddha as, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. Yeah. So that vijnana is the pure consciousness. Then you input the content through your views, opinion and conditioning. And then the five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect, the thought arises. That is how the actual dependent origination, paticca-samuppada, is to be understood. If you meditate, you will know. Yeah. Then from there, you will know for consciousness to arise, for the content to go in, there must be sense basis. Without sense basis, it cannot arise. Yeah. So because of sense basis, there is possibility of contact. Yeah. So it's multidimensional in the sense that upon contact, actually the whole consciousness and its content straight away arise because they lack wisdom. They lack yoniso manasikara. That's why that feeling cannot be pure feeling like the arahant or the enlightened being. If it's not pure feeling, it will condition craving. That's why you cannot cut at feeling. It's a fallacy. Don't go and learn to cut at feeling. Or learn the type of meditation. That type of meditation is a delusion. Illusion. Being gullible, they do that because they don't have the understanding. Without wisdom, feeling will be conditioned into craving straight away. It will not stop. So this is where it differs. I will read on. Dependent on past conditioning activity arises relinking or rebirth consciousness, patisandhi vijnanam, in the subsequent birth. It is so called because it links the past with the present. And is the initial consciousness one experience at the moment of conception. Vijnana strictly denotes the 19th type of rebirth consciousness, patisandhi vijnana, described in the Abhidhamma. All the 32 types of resultant consciousness vipaka citta experienced during lifetime are also implied by the term. The fetus in the mother's womb is formed by the combination of this relinking consciousness with the sperm and ovum cell of the parents. In this consciousness are latent all the past impression. So this is talking about karmic impression. Characteristic and tendency of that particular individual life flux means your karmic conditioning that goes in during birth. The rebirth consciousness is regarded as pure, as it is either devoid of immoral roots of lust, means greed, hatred, and delusion, or accompanied by moral roots. So they believe it's a pure consciousness. Yeah. But it depends. Actually, it depends. Because without avijja, that rebirth consciousness cannot come to be. So that rebirth consciousness is actually a consciousness that is conditioned by avijja. So whatever that is conditioned by avijja can never be pure. You understand? Yeah? So in this sense, I think the author didn't get it clearly understood. So this one is his own version. Maybe he followed the Visuddhimagga. Simultaneously with the arising of the relinking consciousness, there occur form and mind, or, as some scholar prefer to say, the corporal organism. See, he is not sure. He quote the scholar. So this one, corporal organism, is the being that is being born into. For our case, is the human being, the human fetus. Yeah. The second and the third factor, sankhara and vijnana, pertain to the past and present life of an individual. The third and the fourth factor, vijnana and namarupang, on the contrary, are contemporaneous. This compound namarupa should be understood as nama, mind alone, rupa, matter alone. And namarupa is the form and mind, means mind and matter together. In the case of the formless plane, arupa, there arises only mind. In the case of the mindless, asanya plane, only matter. In the case of sentient being, karma or karma. This karma is K-A-M-A. The rhyme of form is rupa, both mind and form. Nama here means the three aggregates of feeling, perception, and sankhara that arises simultaneously with the relinking consciousness. Rupa means the three, dikhet. Dikhet sa dia pali term. Kaya is body. Bhava is the sex, and vata, seat of consciousness, that also arises simultaneously with the relinking consciousness conditioned by past karma. The body, dikhet, is composed of the four elements, namely the elements of extension, patavi, the element of cohesion, apo, the element of heat, tejo, then the last one is, cohesion is apo, element of heat is tejo, then the element of motion or wind is vayu. It's four derivative upada rupa, namely color, order, their respective palitama there. Color is varna, order is ganda, taste is rasa, or malevana. Then nutritive essence is oja. Then vitality is jv indriya. And number 10 is the body, the kaya. So these are the 10 dikhet that comes with it. Sex dikhet and base dikhet also consists of the first nine, and sex bhava and the seat of consciousness vatu, respectively. Okay. From this, it is evident that sex is determined by past karma at the very conception of the being. Here, kaya means sensitive part of the body, pasada. Sex is not developed at the moment of conception, but the potentiality is latent. Neither the heart nor the brain, the supposed seats of consciousness, has been evolved at the moment of conception. But the potentiality of the seed is latent. So this is the author's way of trying to cover for what he explained earlier on. Just like what I explained to you last time, at the moment of conception, actually nothing happened yet. Because there is no heartbeat, nothing. The cell haven't subdivided. The organ, everything is not there yet. It takes a while before they arise. Yeah. So this one, you will have to go through the scientific observation to understand, especially mother who has given birth to baby or child. You can recall the first month of conception, you don't even know until the period didn't come. Understand? Then only you know, or you do a test, they call. But that time is just the sperm and the ovum. They actually start to develop conception. At the moment of conception, there is no heartbeat, nothing. Nothing has been formed. Because the cell need to subdivide. The genes need to subdivide. Then it slowly receives nutrient from the, what they call, you call that one the umbilical cord, or what? The placenta that the mother feed to the fetus. Then it starts to slowly grow. Then until the heart is formed. Not the full form. The organ, the senses, they will start to develop after the subdivision, everything. And then only the pulse of life, the heartbeat, they call it the seed of consciousness, that one can arise. So this seed of consciousness is what our heartbeat is all about. It's within our heart, inside there. There is a gateway. And the seat of consciousness is next to the gateway, because from there it comes. From our karmic nature it comes. That's why this life force, we call it the karmic force. Because each and every one of us have our karmic nature. So this karmic force will give you the life force that you need to pump your heart. Then when it pumps your heart, it sends the blood all over to nourish your organs within your entire body. So this is the part that is not taught and not explained. So in my coming book, I just finished the final editing. Once the book comes out, you will understand. Because that Thursday class, there were conditions. So I explained that teaching. Because we receive a question from somebody, the difference between the heart and the mind. Most people don't understand what that thing is. So of course they may think it's the physical heart. No, it's not the physical heart. We are not interested in the physical heart. But it has a lot to do with the physical heart. So the heart is where the conscience is, the nature is. That's why the seat of consciousness, the gateway, they are all there, within the heart. Then the mind is usually the consciousness part, and we call it the mundane mind, the thought. Because through the brain, when consciousness stay there, it will trigger off the respective consciousness to arise. The content go in from your mind, your brain, your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. That's how it come about. So all these are clearly explained in the book. You wait for the book. Once it come out, then you can understand. There were some short notes done earlier on. You should go to the website and read through it. When the book come out, you will know which date. It's one of the Thursday class. remember it was at Su Yan's house. Okay, we read on a bit more. In this connection, it should be remarked that the Buddha did not definitely assign a specific seat for consciousness, as he had done with the other senses. It was the Kadaic theory, the view that the heart is the seat of consciousness, that prevailed in his time, and this was evidently supported by the Upanishad. The Buddha could have accepted the popular theory, but he did not commit himself. So in the Patthana, the Book of Relation, the Buddha referred to the seat of consciousness in such indirect term as Yam Rupang Nisaya, depending on the material thing, on that material thing, without positively asserting whether that Rupa was either the heart or the brain. This one, the person who write this don't understand. Because the brain is for the thought. That one is thought, is respond to memory. That's why that one is, when you put your consciousness there, means you put your attention up there. You understand? When you are not enlightened, most of the time you put your consciousness up in your brain. You know why? Do you know why? Why your brain always very active up there? Because you put your attention there, understand or not? The senses are all in front of your brain, you realize or not? The thing you see, the thing you hear, smell, taste, then the body tactile and the thought. They are all on your head up there. That's why when you put your attention up there, it will create thought. That's why thought is respond to memory. And this one will never be right thought. It's always egoic. So when you do that, for those who understand the enlightened being, they say that is hell. That's why Krishnamurti also know. He said acting according to memory is not acting at all. You understand? What is memory? Accumulation of experiences. So all your experiences that are accumulated in your brain, what are they? Your good and bad experiences. Understand? So what are your good memory? The good moment, isn't it? Then what are your bad memory? The bad moments. You accumulate what? Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your scars of memory, your insecurity, all you accumulate down there. Of course, there are some happy moments too, when you pass your exam, when you hit the jackpot, or when you have your first pay and all those things. Then when you are successful in certain things, like lucky draw or whatever, you have your happy moment. Then sometimes it's like a memory that you store inside. So if you were to act using your memory, what will happen to you? Because whatever you accumulate are all your conditioning, the things that you are being taught that actually condition the way you act, the way you behave. Means your views, your opinion, your conditioning, all this you accumulate. Then you have a bundle of memory that molds you, and you think that is you. That is where the delusion is. So this memory, when you act according to all this rubbish that you have inside there, means you are acting according to your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your ignorance, or your excitement, and all these things. So this is not acting at all, because these are all evil roots. Wrong view. Conditioning. They are not the truth. They are not the reality. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. That's why those who have the understanding they will bring their consciousness down to their heart. Finally, it will stay there. Then when it's at the heart, it's away from the memory. So most of the time, the thought doesn't arise. They are just aware at the heart area. Yeah? And they function from there. You can think from there. You can see from there. You can be aware clearly from there. So when you are at the heart, that is where your true mind is. That is where your gateway is. That's why you have to understand when you meditate, finally it will drop to the heart. It is where your pure consciousness is. But the danger is the feeling part. The feeling aggregate within your what they call mundane mind before it's enlightened. The aggregate is also the emotion, and the emotion also is next to your heart. Understand? No? Next to your gateway. That's why when you are emotional, your heart becomes affected. You realize or not? So the emotion part of sankhara, because we have these hormones. They are mainly adrenaline and all those things. So all these hormones are released when you become emotional. They will trigger off adrenaline and all those things so that you can act in a very powerful way or very different way. That's why sometimes when the adrenaline is released, when you are very emotional, you can become very different. That's why the lady, you may think they are weak. But the moment they become emotional, they can chop you into 18 pieces. That is when the mind doesn't control them. The emotion take over. And they can do very powerful things because of the adrenaline. They can make them superwoman. They can stop car, vehicle, and all. There are instances of those things. In that sudden surge of adrenaline, they can do things that are beyond the normal human. So this is the part that you have to bear in mind. Because this book doesn't understand the author. So they try to protect the Buddha by saying that it can be either at the heart or at the brain. Where most people think the mind is at the brain. True or not? Yeah? What is your understanding? When people ask, where is your mind? Last time I remember Chief Reverend K. Sri Dhamananda, he pointed to the brain. No? He said, look inside. He pointed to the brain. First time I met him in MU, in one of the talks, the first day, he pointed here, look inside. Oh, and that time I still don't know. No? I thought that is where the mind is. No? So when I meditate, I also look inside. No? So I look into the brain. No? Oh, that is not the true mind. That's why I saw the nimitta and all those things inside there. So that one is where your memory is, your thought. So that one is your mundane mind. So with this, hopefully, you will develop that. But wait till the book come out, then you will understand. Okay, I will read on. The Buddha could have accepted, this one we have gone through. Dependent on the material, okay. Rupanisanya. Without positively asserting whether the rupa was either the heart, hadaya, or the brain. But according to the views of commentators like Venerable Buddhaghosa, Buddhaghosa is not Buddhadasa. Buddhaghosa is the one that wrote the Visuddhimagga. He is a Hindu. And Anuruddha. The seat of consciousness is definitely the heart. This one is correct. It should be understood that the Buddha neither accept nor reject the popular Kadai theory. So this one, you may develop the understanding on your own. You see, the heartbeat, the pulse of life, where you receive your karmic force, your life force, you can know. It's at the heart. And that consciousness comes through there. That's why the seat of consciousness is definitely there. Cannot be other place. You understand? Because that is where your pulse of life is, understand? Or not? The karmic force that animate you. You remember the three conditions that you need to animate into a human being or a living being? What are the three conditions? You must have a physical body that is functional, understand? Or not? Means not damaged, like the car, in proper working condition. Yeah. Then you must have a consciousness inside. Understand? Like the car and the driver. The human body is like a car, and the consciousness that direct you, give you the mental intention, is the driver. Then you need the karmic force to come, to pump your heart, to nourish your organ, to give you the life force, so that you can animate into a live human being. And because this life force, when they come, they pump the heart, it went into your blood. You understand? You understand? It went into your blood, so what happened? Everywhere your blood is, your consciousness is there. That's why when you are aware, mindful, you are very sensitive. Anywhere your blood is, you can feel them. You can be aware. But you have to have the stability of mindfulness, silent mind. That's why I know which part of the brain is involved. Wherever the blood is, I can be aware there. Then our physical body got nerve at the surface. That's why the nerve is a very good way of telling you something is wrong. Like when you got a cut, you got problem, rheumatism or whatever. Then this will manifest as pain or numbness or whatever. Then you will know that this body is having problem. So this is the way your body gives you the sign that something is not right. You have not taken care of your body properly. Either the way you live your life, the way you take your food and other things, or the way you actually abuse your body. Then this body will give you the sign. It will respond accordingly. So when it starts to respond, it's exactly like your karmic nature. Your karmic nature is the same, but because you are not mindful, you are not aware, you are not sensitive, you don't know what is happening. When you have lived your life heedlessly, what happened to you? Your karmic nature will fall, understand? Then when there is condition, you will get into trouble. Getting into trouble means what? All the signs will come, like you very unlucky, very sui. And so you have problem everywhere. Everything not right. That is the sign from your karmic nature to tell you that your life is not in order. You have lived life against the law of karma, against the nature's law. That's why it creates karmic negativity for that friction to arise. And when it arises, when you react to it, get angry, unhappy, then become aggressive through ignorance, through delusion, it set the condition for more karmic negativity to fruit. That's why it's like it come in bundle. You become worse and worse. Not until you can develop the understanding to accept all this. You remember that lady that came back and recovered from cancer? Anita Pujani, something like that. You know what happened? After she came out, that nature actually went through all those things. That's why the pure awareness, she starts to understand. Then when she came back, he had this understanding. That's why all this is the result why the cancer cell develop and why she become like that. It's because of karmic. She has lived her life wrongly through a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, stress and all those things. And this is all past life karmic imprint. That's why when she understand, when she recovered, she knew, she can tell people, this is the way your body was signal to you. Then when your life is not in order, that one she did mention, that one is to my own understanding because I saw this. Then when I was young, I saw all this sign coming. Then later on when I cultivate, the moment I saw any of this sign coming, I become very different. I become very attentive, very alert, very mindful. Then I take care of my mind. Then I can avoid a lot of things because wisdom can free you. When there is wisdom, this karmic conditioning, when they come, as long as they can have effect on you, it will continue to come and harm you or continue to come and make you miserable. Yeah. But the moment you understand, you can accept the reality, then it will reverse. Karma is like that. When it has no more power over you, it will reverse. If it still has power over you, it will continue to haunt you and make you miserable. That's why when you are sensitive, when you are mindful, when you see this sign coming, you need to do what you have to do. You need to ask for forgiveness, you ask for forgiveness. You need to repent, you repent. Then you need to cultivate wholesomeness, invoke power of merit, or make offering, donation, then invoke power of merit for this karmic negativity to be resolved amicably. Otherwise, it will continue to haunt you. Then if you don't have wisdom, you will continue to suffer and become miserable until you wake up. So this is how the law of karma can become very, very powerful. It's because of human ignorance, living beings' ignorance and delusion, nothing else. Okay? So this is the part. Hopefully, you will develop the understanding. Oh, we still got about 20 minutes. Okay, I finished this part. During the embryonic period, the six sense bases, salayatana, gradually evolve. From this pseudo-physical phenomena in which are latent infinite potentiality, the insignificant infinitesimally small speck now develop into a complex six sense machine, means with the senses. Human machine is very simple in its beginning, but very complex in its end. Ordinary machine, on the other hand, are complex at the beginning, but very simple in the end. The force of a finger is sufficient to operate even the most gigantic machine. The sixth sense human machine now operates almost mechanically without any agent like a soul to act as the operator. All the six senses, your eye, your ear, nose, tongue, body and mind, have their respective object and function. The six sense objects such as form, sound, order, what is this word? Sapits. What is sapit? I also don't know. Tangible, that's why he used a lot of English word we don't understand. A mental object collides with the respective sense organ, give rise to the six type of consciousness. It's not collide, it come together. The conjunction of the sense bases, sense object, and the resultant consciousness is contact, pasat, which is purely subjective and impersonal, means before the egoic mind goes in. The Buddha state, because of eye and form, visual consciousness arise. Contact is the conjunction of the three. because of ear and sound arises auditory consciousness. This is like saying in the seeing, there's only seeing consciousness. In the hearing, there's only the hearing consciousness. No one to see, no one to hear. It should not be understood that mere collision, the word is wrong, when the coming together of all these three conditions is contact. Dependent on contact, feeling arises. Strictly speaking, it is feeling that experiences an object when it comes in contact with the senses. It is this feeling that experiences the desirable and undesirable fruit of an action done in this or in the previous birth. Besides this mental state, there is no soul or any other agent to experience the result of the action. Feeling, or as some prefer to say, sensation, is a mental state common to all types of consciousness. Chiefly, there are three kinds of feeling: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. With pain, with physical pain, dukkha, and physical happiness, sukha. What is the meaning? Oh, the taste, strong pleasant taste, good. So that one is for the tongue. So sapit is for the tongue, strong pleasant taste. Okay. There are together five kinds of feeling. The neutral feeling is also termed upeka, which may be indifferent or equanimity. So this neutral feeling got two types. Because it is without wisdom, then we call it indifference. With wisdom is upeka. But there is another type of upeka with energy field, condition state. That one also upeka, the mind also in the fourth jhana. But that one is not the enlightenment factor of upeka. The enlightenment factor of upeka is born of wisdom, a free mind. A free mind with wisdom, not a conditioned mind. Okay. According to Abhidhamma, there is only one type of consciousness accompanied by pain. Similarly, there is only one accompanied by happiness. Two are connected with an unpleasant, unpleasurable feeling. Of the 89 type of consciousness, in the remaining 85 are either a pleasurable or a neutral feeling. It should be understood here that nibbanic bliss is not associated with any kind of feeling. Nibbanic bliss is certainly the highest happiness, nibbana paramang sukang. But it is the happiness of relief from suffering. It is not the enjoyment of any pleasurable object. So this one, he tried to explain, but I don't think he understands what he is trying to tell you, the author. So in the first part, it should be understood that nibbanic bliss is not associated with any kind of feeling. In that sense, he is correct, because nibbana is the unconditioned. So to reconcile with the unconditioned, he has to use this as an explanation. It has got nothing to do with feeling. Because when you realize nibbana, what happens is all your five aggregates cease. Even your pure aggregate, your pure consciousness, all the pure feeling, everything cease. You cannot talk about it because there is nothing, there is no mind. You have realized the unconditioned. So this is the true understanding. But they haven't been through. That's why they cannot tell you. They cannot use word to express it. Then the other part that he says is, nibbanic bliss is certainly the highest happiness, because he translates literally from the Pali word. Because the Buddha did mention this, nibbana paramang sukang. Actually, the meaning is, nibbana is the highest peace. Of course, they use the word sukang, is happiness. But it's actually the highest peace. In the sense that it is the unconditioned. Where it is the unconditioned, there is no peace that can be higher than that. You understand? You understand? Where the conditioned state, even if you can experience sukhang very blissful, then the jhana very calm, very still, very quiet. But this type of peace is born of mental seclusion, even the formless jhana. So this mental seclusion, that type of peace, they call it the citta viveka. You seclude your mind and keep it inside. But that one is still a mind state, you understand? And that one is impermanent. It still has its movement, agitation, very fine. But you cannot see, cannot feel, because you are not sensitive, you are not mindful. That's why that calmness conditions the stillness, the peacefulness, and you think that is true peace. Yeah. But actually, that type of peace is still not the real peace. The one that the five aggregate of form and mind realize, and the form and mind sees, the Nibbana experience, that one is totally different, the unconditioned. There is no mind involved, nothing. That's why there is the highest peace. So here, because they lack this understanding, they say, but it is the happiness of relief from suffering. It is not the enjoyment of any pleasurable object. So on one hand, they contradicted themselves. He said, but it is the happiness of relief from suffering. Means what? When there is no suffering, you feel very good in it. That's why that one you don't have to realize Nibbana. I every time share with you, after I understood this teaching, every time I am not sick or I don't have any physical sickness or problem, I feel very good. That is what happiness of non-suffering is. But that is not Nibbana. So it's just like they say, the absence of suffering is Nibbana. How can? When you do metta, you got suffering or not? You don't have, is it? Is that Nibbana? It's not Nibbana, is it? The absence of suffering is not Nibbana. The cessation of suffering is Nibbana. When suffering cannot arise anymore, cease. And that is Nibbana, understand? One moment of consciousness without suffering, you say that is Nibbana. You go into dhyanic state, there is no suffering, isn't it? And you call that Nibbana. There is no Nibbana. So here, unless they have realized, they can never explain all this. That's why a lot of what the author writes is based on his understanding then. Okay, next paragraph. Dependent on feeling arises craving. That one I explained. So craving is tanha. Which, like ignorance, is the other most important factor in the dependent origination. Then attachment, clinging, they use the word thus, are some rendering of this Pali term. Craving is threefold, namely, craving for sense pleasure, kamatangha, means sensual craving, craving for here they use a very funny English word. That's not, this is wrong. Essential craving, then the other one is bhava tanha and vibhava tanha. So vibhava tanha is not what they call eternalism. You understand? That one is wrong. It's actually craving to be and craving not to be. So craving for the sensual pleasure actually it should be sensual craving. It is positive and negative, you know. Not the positive alone, no. So sensual craving, they call kama tanha. That is the first type of craving. Then you have the other one is called bhava tanha. So bhava tanha is craving to be. Some put as craving for existence? No, it's craving to be, to become something. There is enjoying pleasure, thinking that they are imperishable, and craving for, oh, this is wrong again. Craving for sensual pleasure with a view of nihilism. This is wrong, definitely wrong. It's craving to be, to become something. Yeah? Kama tangha, then bawa tangha, then vibawa tangha. Yeah. Enjoying pleasure, thinking that everything perish after death, the last materialist. This one is totally wrong. It should be craving to become something and craving not to become something. So bhava tanha and vibhava tanha are also interpreted as attachment to rhyme of form and formless rhyme. Yeah. That's why they use the word rupa bhava and arupa bhava. So this one is existent actually. Bhava is existent. Yeah. Becoming, yeah. Respectively. Usually these two terms are rendered by craving for existence and non-existence. See, they use this English word which is wrong. Actually it's craving to become something and craving not to become that thing. Yeah. Like you have craving to become the CEO of the company, yeah? Or to a high position and all those things. Then if you achieve it, you think that is something that you look forward to, then you believe that you will be happy. But you will come to realize that this is a hot seat. Understand? Hot seat means what? A lot of people want that seat. So when you reach there, it's not something that you will like. Understand? You realize a lot of backstabbing and all those nonsense behind. Then you find that this seat is too hot. Every time got problem, then you decide not to be. So this is what happened. When you have the understanding, you will react the other way. Initially you crave for it. After that, you're scared to be there. Then you just want to relinquish it. So craving to be and not to be is also a craving. And it will lead to suffering. Okay, we will finish after this. Eh? There are six kinds of craving corresponding to the six sense object, such as form, sound, and so on. They become 12 when they are treated as internal and external. They are reckoned as 36 when viewed from past, present, and future. When multiplied by the foregoing three kinds of cravings, they amount to 108. This one is technical, not important. It is natural for a worldling to develop a craving for the pleasure of the senses. To overcome sensual desire is extremely difficult. The most powerful factor in the wheel of life are ignorance and craving, the two main causes of the dependent origination. Ignorance is shown as the past cause that conditions the present, and craving the present cause that conditions the future. So dependent on craving is grasping upadana, which is intense craving. Then tanha is like groping in the dark to steal an object. This one also wrong. Tanha is actually craving, your desire. That's why from feeling you start to have craving. You want it, you desire it. But you have not developed intense desire. You know? So grasping is when you grasp at the thing, it means you want it, you really want it. It's no more just a craving, you know? Where it has become clinging. Grasping, you really want to grasp at it already. Yeah. Then after that, it condition becoming, you become that either lustful thing or whatever. Then after that you take birth. You see, passion, when you understand, means you like to do that thing, understand? Or? And it's not grasping. Just like my passion is to share the Dhamma. There is not clinging, there is not craving, there is not attachment. It's my passion. That's why passion is one of the enlightenment factor. You remember the Buddha said the four bases of success. The first one is what? First one is passion, vimamsa. Passion. You must have passion, is it? Then after that, you must work towards it, the spiritual zeal, virya. But that one, the four bases of success is not spiritual zeal. It is just something to drive you because of your passion. Yeah. Oh, sorry. The first one is not vimamsa, I think. The first one, passion, is... There's another word. Vimamsa is investigation. Yeah. The third one is citta, the willpower. The first one, I forgot the Pali word already. There's a Pali word for it. Anybody remember the first one? Yeah? The four bases of success. What is the first one? There's a Pali word for it. You check 37 factor enlightenment, just Google. They call it passion. There's a Pali word I cannot recall. There's a Pali word. Okay. Maybe we stop at page 429. Grasping is fourfold, namely sensuality, false view, adherence to rites and ritual or ceremony, and the theory of a soul. Then the last two are also regarded as false view. Then dependent on grasping arises bhava, which literally means becoming. Okay, we stop here. You manage to Google? The four bases of success, you just key in. What did they write there? No Pali word. Never mind, I will try to Google for you. We still have... Oh, no more, 10:30, okay. I Google the word, then we can end. Ah, yes, Chanda. Chanda. Yeah, passion. That's why that is the Pali word. I was looking for this word. Yeah, Chanda. Chanda. Here they got it wrong. Because a lot of this translation is wrong. Concentration, they put samadhi. It's not samadhi. The actual word there is citta. The four bases of such power are Chanda, Virya, Chitta and Vimamsa. How did this guy get Samadhi? Oh, wrong. The last one is Vimamsa, investigation. Yeah, Chanda is passion, yes. Intention or purpose or desire. Here, zeal means they like, something they like. So it's passion, the word is passion. Chanda, yes. Then here, Virya is not spiritual zeal. They say it's an energy, a driving force. Your spiritual zeal is for the spiritual faculty. But they use the same Pali word. Then consciousness or mind is chitta, that one is correct. So when you use consciousness, chitta as a thought, then it becomes willpower. You will it. Okay, so these are the four bases of success. I repeat, chanda, virya, chitta and vimamsa. The last one is vimamsa. Vimamsa is like investigation like that. Check for like better way to do it, to improve yourself. Okay, so we end, If you got any question, maybe you can rejoice. Sadhu. If you got any question, maybe next Tuesday, you can make a note, then bring it up, then we discuss it. So this cover most of the important aspect of Paticca Samuppada. Here, the author is not so familiar with Paticca Samuppada. Is very difficult to understand and very difficult to explain. That's why not many books can write about it. And those who dare to attempt it, they also find it difficult. And there are very few monks or practitioners who can really understand. So far, I only found one monk who wrote the book that has a lot of understanding, Achan Buddhadasa. They call it Buddhathat, Buddhathat Suratthani, the Thai monk, which is Achayantra's teacher, Achan Buddhadasa, Buddhathat. He was the one that put inside his book that the Paticca Samuppada is not the three lifetime one. He also don't agree. He said that one was wrong. Definitely wrong. And he explained every moment, every instant in life too. That's why when I went there, I heard that, I knew this guy is good. That's why he understand. But he cannot explain so clearly as what I explained. He knows it's within the moment. But he cannot link the physics experiment to create that type of consciousness and the five aggregate of form and mind. But he believes it's not the three period of time. Because he has mindfulness too. He was the one that do anapanasati. Then he linked it to the 16 step. Means the long discourse of anapanasati. Which is the very detailed explanation of how anapanasati also can lead to nibbanic experience, according to sutta, the long discourse. Then after that, he also knew he has to come out of the anapanasati to do the daily mindfulness. That's why when my teacher Ajayantra went and see him after he has developed his cultivation from the jungle, that time he was not a monk yet, he was a yogi. But he heard people say this monk is very good. Then he read one of his books, The Handbook of Mankind, and he found it very good, very good. So because of that, he wanted to go and test him. You know how he test him, right? Ajahn Buddhadasa. He went there. He stared at him. Initially, is from a distance. For 1 week now, he stared at him. No, not like Buddha. He stared at him. You just look at him. If somebody follow you 1 week and keep on staring at you, what will you do? Oh, but they are one yogi and one monk, so that one our question, understand? Later on only he come to know. You know what happened when he stare at him? For the first few days, he Ajahn Buddha does like the incarnate, they say Tonghemoto. You understand? It's like he don't exist at all. And he let him stare, he do what he does. Then he go about his normal thing. Then he decide to come nearer. The next few days he come nearer. Until he come very near. Keep on staring at him. Then it's like he just like normal, just do his thing. Then he also can feel Ajahn Buddha Dasa's energy. Then he knew this is a real monk who understand. He want to test him. See whether he react or not. See whether he chase him away or not. See whether he is affected or not. And on the last day, you know what he did or not? He come forward. He straight away pay respect. Pay respect to him. Then Ajahn Buddha Dasa look at him. Then after he pay respect, Ajahn Buddha Dasa told him, I know you have been here for 1 week. And what are you doing here? Then he has to be truthful to Ajahn Buddha Dasa. He said, I came to test you. I hope you don't mind. He said, not only I don't mind, I knew why you are here. You are seeking for somebody to certify you, to confirm you. Then after that, he also can feel him. No? You know what happened? He said, you can stay. He told Ajayantra, you can stay. Then you can use whatever you want. He said, I will tell my disciple, let you use. Then he invite him to teach you at the temple there. That's how he became very famous after that. Ajayantra. So that was the story behind. So not easy, I tell you. And Ajahn Buddha Dasa was the only monk. When I was there, there is a statue like Kuan Yin, like that one. Then they got this analogy, you know, of a wheel, the wheel of ignorance. You know what is a wheel? V-E-I-L. A veil. He tell his disciple, you know, he said, when you are going through the cultivation, when you reach enlightenment, he said, when the enlightenment happened, it's like the wheel of ignorance drop off. Then everything become clear. I asked the disciple, they don't understand. Well, I understand. The mundane mind drop off. You understand? That's why the nature shine for. He is the only monk who gave that Thai or analogy. But I don't know Thai. So I cannot ask him. I asked the disciple, who is a law student, relevant to study, who is a law student. He cannot explain. He said, no lah, just the wheel of ignorance drop off, is it? He said, Ajahn Buddha just say the wheel of ignorance drop off. I said, did he say anything else apart from the wheel of ignorance? Actually, it's the mundane mind that drop off. Sure cannot explain that because he never asked also. And the teacher, nobody asked, he will not explain. So my wife say, pass very long already. Oh, 10 minutes. 10 minutes, okay. Okay, we better end. Sharing our merits and transfer our merit. My wife, after alarm, give me signal. Thank you. Akasata Chirubumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anamoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo ibyang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo ibina penyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, pay respect to the worthy ones, then we can end. Yeah, Elsie got an announcement. So this coming Sunday, there is a house dana at her house. She will send the address and location out. So 24 February, 2019. The time is as usual. You can be there if you are early by 11 or 11:15 is the best. We are normally at 11:30 we will start.